Going to come to order. Today is April, what is, today is 25th. I don't know. It's just moving so fast. So.
I know.
Oh, you know. Oh, good.
1946. Wait a minute. No.
Doing better. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2851. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House Bill 2851 is the measure that would create a task force on transportation needs for persons with developmental disabilities. It would declare an emergency effective upon passage. You have, and we've had for a while, the Dash 1 amendments that modifies that membership as indicated on the SMS. We have still not received the fiscal on this. And so if the committee wishes to consider moving it to Ways and Means for that fiscal to be considered, that would be appropriate. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do we have any feel as to what the dollar amount of the fiscal may be on the 2851? We just didn't have any testimony at all. Certainly, if the recommendation is to move it to Ways and Means, we could do so with recommendation. Based upon the funding criteria. So if there's any discussion.
Right. I see a hand going up in the audience, and I'm not sure what they know, but I guess we could ask you to come up and see if you have any indication. And for the record, your name.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Lee Fay. I'm with the Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disability Program, and I'm the administrator for the Office of Developmental Disability Services. And I apologize for the flow of the fiscal in making its way to this committee. We have then, from our office, put information together that, based on the bill analysis and the testimony that I've heard this committee talk about on the expectations of this commission, identified a 0.5 FTE to be associated with the committee. With the committee, with some associated costs, and it was in the neighborhood of $55,000. And I assume that that needed some further clarification, so it may be slightly higher, slightly lower than that figure, but it was primarily based on a 0.5 FTE and the reimbursement of members to participate, including members coming from rural communities.
And Madam Chair, that was my concern was that, and it was originally expressed earlier in April when this bill was heard, were that the rural demands for these kinds of things were totally different, and they should be at the table.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, is there any, not to add more stress to anyone's life, but is there any possibility that we would get a fiscal prior to Monday?
Chair Beyer, Representative Buckley, I know that the fiscal has been completed from the department. I think it's just a matter of it's making its way, and I know there are many points for bottlenecking at this time, but I believe it was anticipated you would have had it by today, so I assume it's very close to coming to your committee.
If I could just follow with a comment. Thank you very much for the information, Mary. If it does end up, it's under $50,000, which has been kind of a threshold mark of sending things to Ways or Means or not, I think could be advantageous I'm very much in support of this concept to not send to Ways and Means, but to send to the floor to see if we get a vote for it on the floor.
Okay. I have a question. According to my information, that it directs the Department of Human Services and the Department of Transportation shall provide staff. So, in your mind, does the fiscal you've been working on and kind
Chair
of take
Beyer,
that into consideration?
We communicated with staff and Department of Transportation again after hearing the committee discussion on this. It was we believe that the primary work would really be directed to our seniors and people with disabilities. Certainly it would be staffed by both Department of Transportation staff and our office, but the fiscal would really was more on the senior and people with disabilities side, and so we did work together on creating the fiscal that's coming your way.
Thank you. Okay. So if it appears that maybe we want to just close the work session and
hold until
and
Monday.
Hold until Monday and carry this one over.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Perhaps those of you have been here longer than I have. What happens if you do send a bill to the floor and then later learn that the fiscal is over, I guess, particularly with the kind of schedule we're on right now?
Do you want me to try and take a shot at this? Go ahead, Representative Butler, and I'll follow.
Madam Chair, the rules are the rules have been at $50,000. If you get to that, and particularly, it's not just if it was just money, $50,000, and that isn't chump change in anybody's budget, but maybe it's budget dust here. But there's also then the issue that Ms. Thay has talked about, and that is the position authority. There's a half-time position, and that's got to go to Ways and Means at that particular point.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering if we wanted to go ahead. One thing which we could do is go ahead and recommend a do pass here and move it to Ways and Means, recognizing that they're going to have position authority. I didn't anticipate and contemplate originally that position authority would be needed. I thought that we were dealing with existing staff in ODOT, existing staff in DHS, and possibly some assistance to bring people from these rural areas and from other parts of the state to testify on behalf of this, that it might have been, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. But if we're talking position authority, then you do need to have a budget vetting. So I'm wondering at that particular point if we wouldn't be just as smart to go ahead and move it on down with a due pass recommendation, and then Madam Chair, with other members of the committee duly appointed, certainly there could be a little fire built under them down there, because it isn't a lot of money, but it is position authority.
Thank you, Reverend Sam. It's very helpful.
Thank you. Okay. I don't know if I close it, but I'm going to close the work session on 2851, and I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2827, House Bill 2270, and HJM 11.
Madam Chair, before we proceed, could we remind people to turn off their cell phones and their BlackBerries?
Yes. Something I always forget, but there's a lot of feedback in the room, so if you have a cell phone on BlackBerry, we would appreciate you turning it off. And Judith.
You want to go through all three of them?
Yeah.
Or just briefly?
Just briefly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. All three of the measures that the chairs indicated deal with the Real ID Act. House Bill 2827, in fact, would prohibit the state from expending funds to comply with the federal Real ID Act unless certain requirements are met. We just have received the Dash 1 amendments this afternoon, and the department is here to walk us through those specifics of the replacement amendment for 2827. House Bill 2270 is the governor's bill that would in fact conform the Oregon Vehicle Code to provisions of the Federal Real ID Act. And finally, HJM 11 is a memorial that would urge Congress to extend the deadlines for implementation of the Federal Real ID Act and to provide the states with adequate funding for implementation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I'm going to go ahead and call up Lorna Young.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you.
I have a stack of paper for you. You do not have to read it all.
Thank you. Just make sure you identify yourself.
I'm Lorna Youngs. I'm the administrator of the DMV. And what I have provided for you is testimony on House Bill 2827 as it sits, its amendments, as well as testimony on House Bill 2270. And I've also provided for you a timeline for Real ID Act implementation as proposed by the rules. So I can be guided by you, Chair, as how you would like me to proceed. Would you like me to provide an overview of House Bill 2827 or go directly into the amended version of it?
Committee, I guess we want to go to the amended version. If you think that you're going to be able to cover what we need to know, and I'm not sure how much of the committee their familiarity with this issue and how much background that they want. So,
Madam Chair, here is my proposal. What I would like to do in the course of covering the amendments to House Bill 2827 is to give the committee a brief overview of what the Real ID Act does as a statute, what the regulations clarify, and what this set of amendments would do, if that pleases the committee.
That sounds very good.
So as you know, the Real ID Act was signed into law on May 11, 2005, and it gave states 3 years to come into compliance with the requirements for a uniform process for issuing driver licenses and ID cards. There is no penalty for states for failure to comply in that there is no federal money or federal authority to compel compliance, except for the fact that the federal government will not accept any state's identification card or driver license as identification for federal purposes. And federal purposes primarily means boarding an airplane or entering into federal facilities where some sort of photo identification, government-issued photo identification is required. If you would turn to my testimony to appendix or attachment A, that goes through the key requirements of the Real ID Act as it was first passed. It specifies minimum requirements that should go into all of the new driver licenses and ID cards, such as your legal name, date of birth, digital photograph, residence address, and customer signature. It specifies certain card security features, a minimum set to prevent counterfeiting and duplication. Machine-readable technology, which would be common across all states, so that cards could be read by one common card reader. And many states use different formats. It requires electronic verification of the base documents that are used to establish identity and establish legal presence. Right now, most states are basing their, this state in particular, is basing identification on perusal of documents without a verification system. And there are verification systems really only in place for two types of documents, Social Security cards and immigration documents. It requires proof of lawful status in the United States, and that can be provided either by proving that you are a citizen of the United States, have been granted citizenship, or a permanent resident, or you have some sort of temporary lawful status. It requires the imaging of the documents that are presented to the departments of motor vehicles for your proof of identity and legal presence, and the retention of those images for at least 7 years in paper form or 10 years in a digital form. It requires digital photographs, which most states are doing now. And what's important is that it requires that we take the photo first. Now when we take your photo, we take it after you've proven that you've got all your documents. Those documents are sufficient and they're not fraudulent. Now, before we establish whether your documents are fraudulent or not, you take the photo, and that's a fraud deterrent in that you would have that person's face on record. You would have the image of their documents. You could provide that information to law enforcement, I assume, is the purpose of that section of the bill. The goal of it is to have one license, one person. And so the bill asks, or the statute asks that states confirm that the applicant's license has been terminated in another state before issuing. It also requires physical security for the facilities where driver licenses and ID cards are issued, background checks on persons who manufacture or produce the driver licenses and ID cards, training of employees to recognize fraudulent documents, limiting an expiration dates on driver licenses of no more than 8 years. And I forgot to mention that for cards that are issued to individuals who have temporary residence, let's say they've got a 2-year visa or 3-year visa or 1-year visa, your driver license would be tied to your length of stay. And it also requires, as you see on the bottom page 4, or it allows for non-compliant cards. So you could issue a card that was not real ID compliant as long as it was clearly indicated on the card that it was non-compliant and not acceptable for federal purposes and had a unique design or color. Recently, this March, approximately 2 years after the passage of the Real ID Act, turning back to page 1, the federal government released, or the Department of Homeland Security released their draft regulations for how they would implement this statute. They were published in the Federal Register on March 9, which is the start of the 60-day clock for comment period, which is a 60-day comment period. The regulations specify that states are to comply by May 11, 2008, or their driver licenses and ID cards would not be acceptable. However, it does provide for states to ask for an extension and that to for compliance, and that extension would be until December 31st, 2009. Thereafter, starting January 1st, they would be expected to be certified in compliance by Department of Homeland Security and begin issuing compliant cards. It also specifies a re-enrollment period of 5 years. Expectation is, in order to make sure that everyone gets through the process in an expeditious fashion, they're requiring that everyone get a Real ID compliant card within a 5-year period starting May 11th, 2008. So that means for states that would be seeking an extension, that compliant period is truncated down to 3 years and 4 months. And if you will turn to page 5, I'll walk you through some of the key requirements of the Real ID Act that were given more clarity to some extent in the rule. Remembering that the rule is draft, and there is a great deal of the language in the rule is requesting further comment. So the rule does not solve all the problems, and the final rule may not look like the proposed regulations. But under the card specification section, they're requiring some standards that the American Association of Motor Vehicle Specifications, reformatting the card, requiring a mandatory vertical format for cards for individuals under 21. In this state, we have the picture on the other side of the card, and it's bordered in red for individuals under 21, but many states use a vertical format to distinguish individuals under 21. There are additional features that are required by the rule for security in the card itself. It requires that the card be annually tested by an independent tester at a recognized laboratory and certified as Real ID compliant, and that the state conduct an annual review of the card design to determine its ability to resist and compromise and to identify any fraudulent activity attempts. It requires that we capture a full legal name. That's an interesting issue because people's names occur in different formats in different databases. Your full legal name is the name that existed on your birth certificate or is the name in which you've had some legal process to change. Many times people are known as by their middle name or they're known by nickname, and so your name occurs in many forms sometimes in different databases, and there's an attempt here to try and get back to the full legal name. It requires that we have up to 125 characters in our barcode and in our database for that name, and right, so that means expanding data fields.
It's requiring machine-readable technology. There are several proposals in the Real ID Act, but it appears that they're kind of settling on a 2D barcode, but they're asking for comment on that. When it comes to electronic verification, they recognize that there are only two systems right now that are available. The SAVE system, which is with the Department of Homeland Security, which you use to verify immigration status, and the SOLVE system, which is with Social Security Administration to verify Social Security number. There is a pilot program for birth certificates, a system called EVE. It will take another $3 million to create the hub, and then another $120-some million to get all the data electronically into that database. Oregon's in a fortunate position of having birth records back to 1920 in electronic format, but not so many states are in that same boat. It requires upon renewal or reissuance of a card.
Could you repeat that figure and what that would be?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, our understanding within our recent discussion with Vital Records is that it will take about $3 million to establish the central hub for the electronic verification system for Vital Records, the EVE system, but that to get all of the states' birth records in an electronic format back to 1935, which is what is being proposed by these rules, I believe the figure is around $120 million.
Follow-up? So is that to this one state, or is that across the country?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, across the country.
Thank you very much.
That's the national figure.
Thank you.
It requires that upon renewal or reissuance of a driver license, that the state re-verify the documents that you have with the issuing agency in case there have been changes in your status. It also allows the states to provide a written exception process for individuals who, for reasons beyond their control, have lost their documents, primarily below. This is just for identity documents. There is not a exception process for proof of legal presence. So this could present a problem for individuals who've lost their birth certificate. It is both a identity document and proof of lawful presence in the U.S. It delineates the specific source documents that would be acceptable. It does, again, require that there is imaging of ID documents and that it be in a format that is exchangeable between states, but it does not specify that those documents must be exchanged between states. It does, however, state once again, as the law stated, that there should be electronic access between states of information in the driver license database, but that's not clear whether that also extends to the source documents that have been imaged. And again, it reiterates the desire for one person, one license by having states check with other jurisdictions to determine if a state has issued a Real ID compliant card. And right now, there is not a system in place for us to be able to do that. We have a national database that allows us to check whether or not a driver has had a suspended license in another state, but drivers who have clean records, there's no database that allows us to check what your status is in another state. The rules do propose that you can renew or replace an ID card using the previous photo on file. That would not be possible here in Oregon because the facial recognition law passed last session requires that every time you replace a photo, you come in person and do that so we can compare your image with the image that we have on file. The regulations are specifying that states prepare a comprehensive security plan. They're asking for a more comprehensive security plan than was, I think, originally contemplated in the statute. They're requiring background checks on all employees who have the ability to affect the recording of any information that was required to be verified, and so states identify who those individuals would be. And then, of course, they reiterate the fact that noncompliant cards are permissible, and they expect that states will probably have noncompliant cards. So that's what the Real ID Act does. That's what the proposed regulations would do. And as I say, we've provided you with a timeline to get some sense of what how this would work. And on the top of the timeline, you see that October, or actually on the bottom, October 1st, 2007 is the first date on that timeline, and that is the deadline for states to apply for an extension for the federal, for the compliance for the Real ID Act. The next date you see on there is April 2008. The regulations specify that, that 6 months after receiving your grant of the extension, you must present a compliance plan. We have comment by Department of Homeland Security that would lead us to believe that they would be granting those extensions somewhat expeditiously within 30 to 45 days. So we looked at April as being an approximate time in which we would need to submit our compliance plan. And the rules are rather sketchy about what's required. They simply state, as you see with the asterisks, that it provides schedules, milestones, and budgets in order to achieve compliance by the end of the extension period, which is 12/31/09. So the next date you see on that is May 11, 2008, and that's the drop-dead date for those states that have decided to be in compliance, must be in compliance by that date, or those states that have decided not to submit a compliance extension and have decided not to comply with the Real ID Act, such as Washington. Theoretically, this is the date in which the Department of Homeland Security will stop accepting their cards and driver licenses for federal identification. Then, as you see, the next date is December 31st, 2009, the end of the extension period. And January 1st, we would be expected to be in compliance if the dates do not change from what is proposed in the rules and begin to start issuing Real ID compliant cards. And then May 11, 2013 is a date in which they expect that all of the states would have had all of their driver license and ID cards through the process. So in Oregon, that since we take 8 years for a renewal cycle, that would be less than half the time because we would have 3 years and 4 months to move everyone through.
I have a quick question. And if we were to authorize this session and ask you to go ahead and implement this, when is the soonest that you actually could have it implemented or be ready?
Madam Chair, we would be hard-pressed to do everything that is required in the rules by the 31st of 2009, but we would work extremely hard to get there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Lorna, if the federal highway funds were threatened from the feds and they told you that you weren't going to get your highway funds, would it still take until 2009?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, absolutely. The magnitude of the changes that are needed to our systems, the fact that this is not a legal presence state, We are only hooked up to Social Security, but for commercial drivers, not for all of them. We are not hooked up to the immigration system. Our driver licenses are not tied to length of stay. A lot of the specificity that has gone into the rules about what's required in terms of data fields, and it's a lot of work. And we have an old legacy system that does not allow us to work simultaneously on many parts of it at the same time. We're exploring ways in which we can increase that work, but in most cases we have to make a change to the system, test it to make sure that that it works correctly and it does not create problems in other sections, and then put in another change. So much of what we need to do is sequentially, but this is a very large amount of change required. And at the same time, we are implementing the Senate Bill 640, which was passed last session, which was moving us to central issuance and facial recognition. And at the same time, we are implementing about $3 million worth of changes to our commercial driver license database. So there's a lot of work to be done here, sir.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to be sure that Kibbe understands that there's no highway money being threatened right now.
I fully agree, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Representative Gilman. My concern is that when we want to get things done in cities and counties in Oregon, we tell them that we will cut off their tobacco share of tobacco funds and their share of alcohol funds. I just am concerned that when this issue raises to a high enough level of boiling point in Washington, D.C., that our federal highway funds will in fact be threatened. And I just wanted to make sure that it's still going to take us that many years as soon as we're threatened with the loss of several hundreds of millions of dollars of federal highway funds.
Madam Chair, if I may respond, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the federal government does not have the authority to threaten highway funds in order to compel compliance. That is the reason why they have chosen this form. The only way driver licenses are regulated by states. It is only commercial driver licenses that are regulated by the federal government through interstate commerce, because commercial drivers travel across state lines. But the federal government has no authority over state driver licenses. And so the only way that they can back into that is by saying, we will not accept them in our business. But they cannot threaten us with any funds.
Representative Gilman again.
Now I want to change subjects. We have an ID card that you issue. Will you be checking legal presence to issue that ID card?
Madam Chair, Representative Gilman, under the Real ID Act, legal presence would be required for both the driver licenses and ID cards, because the driver license serves as a de facto identification card. And so really what they're looking at is both of those, because we use exactly the same processes to establish your identity and your residency when we issue a driver license or an ID card. With the driver license, we also make sure you can drive. So,
that's enough.
Okay. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Young, have you determined at all how much this would cost the state if we were to implement the Real ID?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, we've estimated that if we were to implement as proposed in the current proposed regulations, that it's close to $70 million over the next three biennia. We would be spending the 07-09 biennium developing the work, and the 9-11 and then 11-13 implementing. And a good portion of that, about $34 million of that cost, is the fact that is the accelerated enrollment period, the requirement to move people through faster than we normally would.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. If there are no more questions, then I will move to what the proposed amendments to 2827 do. What the bill does is that it allows the department, it gives the Department of Transportation the authority to file for the extension that is specified in the Real ID Act regulations, to submit the compliance plan as required, to enter any necessary agreements that we would have to have with other state agencies or federal agencies or the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administration, primarily for the purposes of verifying data, and it would allow us to perform system development in order to begin to implement the Real ID Act. System development including the acquisition of any equipment or information technology that we would need to acquire, the modification or upgrading of our current equipment systems or databases, establishing electronic connections with other motor vehicle agencies or federal agencies or businesses for the purposes of verifying documents, redesigning our driver licenses and ID cards to meet the minimum content requirements of the final regulations, and developing and implementing any comprehensive security plans that would be required by the final rules. Obviously, I've laid out some of the issues to consider. the fact that even though the rules allow us until the 31st of December of 2009, we'll be hard-pressed to make that date because of the magnitude of the changes. The fact that we will have a very short period of time to re-enroll. There, of course, will be additional statutory changes needed to actually implement the Real ID Act regulations. This authorizes us to work on the system's development, but not actually doesn't actually change the requirement for what a driver license or ID card issuance would be. The impact to the department of just this amendment, we've estimated as $11.2 million for the 07-09 biennium and $13 million for the 9-11, and that's primarily, as I say, the systems work that needs to be done. That does not include any actual additional field staff, or because we would still need authorization to put into place those requirements. So in summary, what this bill set of amendments do is authorize the department to continue to work towards implementing the Real ID Act without actually putting in place those requirements in statute until such time as they're clarified by federal regulation.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Lerner, it's good seeing you. And while I've got the microphone and can put on the record, I just want you to know our DMVs do a fabulous job.
Thank you, sir.
Really quick, in your exchange with Representative Butler, you shared the thought that there is not a penalty for noncompliance. And you probably have already said the answer to my question here, but I was probably daydreaming. In your introduction, it says, however, driver licenses and identification cards issued by states that are not in compliance will not be recognized by federal agencies for official identity purposes, such as security checks at airports. And I'm not posing this question to you. I guess I'm posing it to the committee. That seems pretty significant. It's not a penalty, but come Christmas time, when everybody's backed up at the airport or folks aren't able to get into a federal facility, that seems significant. And I guess here's my question to you, and I think you answered it and I missed it. Is there an alternative for the state of Oregon to citizens who will not, if we're not in compliance?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the alternative would be another document that the federal government would recognize, such as a passport or other federally issued documents. I guess that would be, as far as I could tell, the alternative to be able to get into a federal facility would be some form of government-issued ID that they would accept, and if it isn't the state's, it's theirs.
And this isn't a comment on you, Lorna. I guess to our committee, I would not want to be an elected official come Christmas time after this is implemented and the penalty is put in place, and folks are at the airport and they're now being told they need a passport to get through the front doors. I think we'd have a lot of citizens in the state of Oregon who are distraught. And so while the federal government has placed a huge burden on us, at the same time, I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out how to deal with that issue. And ignoring it isn't going to ignore the problem that's going to come down the line. Thank you.
Thank you. I do just wanted to clarify, Representative Smith, that she wasn't really saying that wasn't a penalty. She was just saying there wasn't a financial penalty to the highway.
Thank you.
Money is, I think, that what they couldn't do. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorna.
Okay. That concludes my testimony on House Bill 2827. Did you wish any comments on House Bill 2270?
Probably not. I think that I think it pretty much went over what you had talked about earlier and what was required,
That's correct, Madam Chair. My testimony gives you an overview of what the Real ID Act is. It gives you an overview of what the regulations are. It said the bill itself would implement the Real ID Act, but we also comment on the fact that given the regulations, there would need to be modification to the bill. in several places. But that, again, would be problematic since we don't have the final regulations.
Yep. So, and I don't see any other questions, but do you have anything that you might want to put on the record on the memorial and the amendments?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay. I think we'll bring up Andrea Meyer. And I think I'll go ahead and ask Erica to come up with her.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I'm handing out both my testimony and a submission from the Planned Parenthood of Southern Oregon, and I will go over that briefly in a moment. I'm not going to read from my testimony. I will want to direct your attention to some things. But let me begin today to at least establish our position on these various bills for the clarity of the record. I'm here today in support of House Joint Memorial 11. My testimony refers to the Dash 1 amendments, and that's incorrect. It's the Dash 2 that are before you. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2827, unamended. And I'm here today in opposition to House Bill 2270. The ACLU of Oregon, along with many coalition partners and folks across the country, do oppose the Real ID. It is something that was opposed by the National Governors Association and the National Conference of State Legislators. And it unfortunately preempted federal law that was actually there to address identification security called the Intelligence Reform and Terrorist Prevention Act of 2004 that included governors and legislators and DMV folks and all the stakeholders. And it's that we hope that Congress will return to. It's that that addresses security issues around licenses without moving them into what this does, which is our first ever national identification card. And it does because there are a broad array of regulations on how the licenses will be issued and how they will be verified. I think, as already noted, we believe that driver's licenses should be to know the rules of the road and to get insurance. This is a burden on the state. Ms. Young's testified, and I really don't disagree with anything she put forward today. I will quickly go over that this does remake our licenses, reconstructors our computer databases. It requires issuance, validity, and completeness of every document. That means every document you come to DMV with, not just your certified birth certificate, not just your Social Security information numbers, but residency, utility bills. Every document that you provide, according to federal regs, you'll have to verify. Now, there's a glitch here. There's nothing in the private demand or requirement that the private sector, those who issue our various bills that we will present as supporting documents to our identity and our residence, to actually respond to requests from state DMVs and local DMV offices to verify these documents. That will be a huge frustration in DMV and a particular frustration to Oregonians who are told to come back later or left hanging. And you heard comment about the fact that the federal regs are really very clear about the name, and it has to be your full name. And you will actually have to provide, particularly for women who are married or divorced, you will have to provide, I believe, certified document and court-ordered documents establishing any name changes that you've done. You can't just come in and say, well, here's my old license, I had a different name or anything. It's going to have, everything is going to have to be carefully documented. And you can easily foresee a lot of people having to come back multiple times. Birth certificates are not standard, and they change within the state. But, again, if no verification, no license. We have many concerns about the computer systems and database changes, the machine-readable technology, all the new equipment and information and accessing that DMV will do. The other issue is that every document you present now, today, they don't scan. Every document you present after this goes into effect, they will scan and database and potentially, and most likely, as far as we're concerned with the draft regs, link to shared databases either in the state and or federal government all at the same time or at different times. That's a huge identity security risk for all of us that I will get back to in a moment. I want to focus on Oregonians. You know, Representative Smith, you're right. If someone shows up at the airport on Christmas and can't get on a plane, that's going to be really hard. But what I want to focus is on is how difficult it is going to be for Oregon citizens to get the real ID document, to even go to the airport with the real ID document to get on the airplane. Indeed, we think it will be far easier for them to actually have a passport. Many citizens are not able to get their identification, and it's going to be the draft regs. And I just note the original bill that the governor sponsored, the original bill that Senator Mensker introduced, said that you're going to prove your citizenship by your Social Security number. I believe many states do that right now. You still will have to establish Social Security number, but that's not your threshold proof of identity and citizenship. It is two documents if you were born in this country: certified birth certificates and a current U.S. passport. This is going to create many burdens and hurdles for many Oregonians. There are 6,000 jurisdictions across this country that issue birth certificates. You all know about Hurricane Katrina. You know that the documents contained either by the individuals or by the government entities may not exist anymore. Over years and decades, buildings that have stored these documents have burned down or been destroyed. Individuals no longer have them. People who were born not many years ago, because that might include me, 40, 50, 60 years ago, are going to have real challenges, particularly if they weren't born in this state. Birth certificates are not always computerized. Sometimes they're on paper file. There are a million of foreign-born citizens with no access to their originating documents. Americans born at home, many of them actually never got a birth certificate. Many folks don't know where they were born. Think of those who are in the foster care system or those who were adopted. They either might not know what state they were born in, they might not know their mother's name. There are no exceptions under the draft federal regs to assist this state to help those people get a real ID. And then they need all the resources and money to pay to get these documents, to then pay to get their real ID. It is going to disproportionately affect folks in your communities who are elderly, who are poor, who are disabled, who are homeless. And so when we talk about real ID and we talk about the fact that you'll need it to get on an airplane, we really must not forget that the effect on consumers and the effect on Oregonian citizens is tremendous, and it's the hidden secret here that a lot of them will never get it. This is also an unfunded mandate, not a happy thing for this state and every other single state. And it's not so hidden a tax, because it's right there, and you're going to have to deal with it either on this end, and Oregonians are going to have to deal with it at the DMV when they have to pay additional costs. Now, Real ID has often been purported to address identity theft, because it will make it harder for people to get licenses. I want to say at the front end that I think part of passage of Senate Bill 640, which I'll address more later in a moment, is the centralized issuance, and that's to go and address the concerns they've had. So right now you can get your license in 10, 20 minutes. Quickly, you get the turnaround, instant gratification. Centralized issuance will require it to be mailed to you in a few days. They can do additional checks to ensure that there's not someone who's trying to get it who isn't entitled. But what this Real ID does is create this huge database of systems, and now scanning all of your documents, your birth certificate, your Social Security card, and every single document will be scanned, retained by DMV, and linked to states to share, so for verification purposes. That's a gold mine for identity theft. There's safety issues there. There's also privacy issues. It does require common machine-readable technology, actually, on your driver's license. Now, the good news about the draft regs was they pretty much said we're not going to use RFID technology, which concerned the ACLU and a lot of privacy groups, because that can be scanned with machine-readable technology if I'm close to you. But it still does require certain data points, all the basic, your name, your address, and gender and birth and all that on your actual license for scanning. Oregon is one of the many, many, many states that doesn't have any protections against the private sector from scanning that, databasing it, selling it to ChoicePoint. So that's one step that we'll need to critically address in a legislative package to deal with Real ID. As I mentioned, it will be a new tax. Maine is estimated that it would cost them $185 million. California, $500 to $750 million for 5 years, and on and on. Now, is Oregon alone, because there's been conversations, so we really have to move forward on this, we really must do this, because Oregonians are going to be upset if we don't. Well, I want to direct you now to a portion in my written testimony. That is an unnumbered page after immediately after my written testimony. And it looks like this, and at the bottom it has, in small print, the list of all the states that are pushing back. This is unprecedented, members of the committee, that Maine, Montana, Idaho, and now our state up above, Washington, have passed laws saying they aren't going to do it there. They've passed laws, so they will have to deal with their residents, when Oregonians or Washingtonians, when they say they can't get on the plane, because they've actually said we're not doing it here. And this is and there's over 28 states listed on here. And I want to assure you that this is bipartisan. This isn't red state versus blue state. This isn't East Coast, West Coast. This is the heartland. This has been led by Republicans as much as Democrats. Republican Jim Guest from Missouri has working tirelessly on this. Republican Governor Butch Otter of Idaho, who originally supported it, now as the governor, has serious doubts, and Idaho is pushed backwards. U.S. Republican Senator John Sununu, describing the fundamental flaw, said, simply put, the Real ID Act replaced sound policy with bad policy. I only wish that others had spoken more forcefully when a few of us in Congress tried to fight an emotional rhetoric and prevent an unnecessary bill from becoming law. Now, I want to briefly note just what else is in this packet that I've provided to you. That page there, which lists the many states pushing back, really discusses what we think you should do this session, which is to appropriate, authorize DMV to get an extension, but also request and require DMV to evaluate the final rules when they are final, and prepare a full package of what you all should be doing in the next legislative session. And I want to, and my next page is my version of a timeline. DMV's is prettier, but mine does go over the timelines. What's interesting is you have detailed timelines now basically saying that Oregon will have to start issuing compliant licenses if they get an extension in 2010. And I personally cannot imagine any state that will not be filing for an extension, because it's impossible. Even those states that are eager to run forward, the few and far between, cannot do it. You don't have the final rules. I mean, let me just remind you, we introduced legislation here that said Social Security numbers. That's not compliant with Real ID. So that's the timeline. Okay, there's one rule we do not know. That's when Department of Homeland Security is going to issue the final rules. We don't know. We know it's taken them a long time to issue the draft rules. Let's hope they do it before May 2008. Let's say they do it soon so our agencies can evaluate it, but there's no timeline, and there is unprecedented pushback from the states. Now, the next three pages of my testimony is to bring to your attention the many legislative decisions that I think you all need to make and urge you to make, and urge that we not move forward now with a whole lot of language that authorizes the agency to move forward, because I think those are decisions that you all should be making as part of a legislative package. There are some things that could be done by rules, but you might, in terms of protecting Oregonians' privacy safeguard issues, should be making those decisions. What databases to link to? Some of that is left to a choice to the state. I think instead of the agency, you all should be evaluating what databases are going to provide the most security when other states can join them and access Oregonians' information. So certainly that could be done by rules, but I would urge you not to move forward, because if you do want to say we have serious concerns, we're accountable to the voters, we want to ensure that Oregonians are safeguarded, if you give DMV authority, they will appropriately move forward with making those choices, because that's certainly within their purview. But in this case, you need to step back, I urge you, and say, no, we need to have the presentation of what these choices are going to be, and we need to provide the oversight and guidance. So in addition to the draft rules not being final, I read them. 38 pages of fuzziness. I've never seen rules that say, we really don't know the answers, and I'm sure Ms. Youngs can testify, well, we know states are going to have to get into these databases, and we're going to help you, but we're not going to run it, and we're not going to pay for it, and we're not going to figure out exactly what it should be. But we'd like your input. We know you should make barcodes of some kind, but we'd like your input. I've never seen rules such so unclear to guide states, even in the drafting stages, so it's very hard for DMV to move forward. There's so much in flux. 28 states moving forward and more filing each week. This is a dynamic that's never been present before in legislation. Congress is looking at this. Akaka and Sununu have introduced legislation that comes back to that Terrorist Reform Act of 2004 that I mentioned. Governors and legislatures, as I must reiterate bipartisanly, are saying don't do this. But if you do move forward with legislation giving some authority, I do want to note those three pages. I want to give you some examples as to what I mean other than just sort of the database choices that they have to make that I think should be done as a package, not piecemeal. Department of Homeland Security even says to states, you should look at privacy laws regarding that scanning of licenses. There's model legislation and a few states have them. That's my number one. We must pass a statute as part of the package if you move forward with Real ID that protects Oregonians from third-party private consumers from sweeping off your personal information, databasing it, storing it, using it, and selling it and making a profit. Document exceptions, as Ms. Young testified, birth certificates and current U.S. passports for U.S. citizens is not, there aren't exceptions, but there are other ones, and I think you all need to have input. Whether you want to do non-real ID licenses, what choices DMV will take on security plans. She mentioned accurately that there will be employee background checks for vendors, contractors, and licensee and employees. I know this law very well. It's very detailed. This law requires FBI fingerprint background checks. We have a whole series of laws. We need to evaluate whether those need to be updated and changed in terms of the protections and the requirements under the law. Verification of document databases. We need to look at how you might need to help counties help if they have to start issuing birth certificates, how to pay for it. And address verification. We need to not move forward and waste taxpayer money. And I do bring forward that we've going to cost millions, but also Senate Bill 640 is an example of, I think, moving forward too quickly. That bill, as in addition to having the centralized issuance, has the biometric facial software recognition. ACLU opposed it because technology is not sound, and after 8 years, it's 40% inaccurate. But it was purported by folks and sold as part of bringing us into compliance with Real ID. It was a trigger date of May 2008. Well, as you now have heard, Senate Bill 6 facial recognition software is not a requirement. So we are now expending money because we were guessing at what the final rules would say. Social Security, the birth certificates, how difficult to get the birth certificates. Now I refer you briefly to Planned Parenthood of Southern Oregon's testimony. They couldn't be here. They do not have a position on these bills, but they wanted to point out the experience they had. About 8 months ago, because of federal changes for health services, they were required to have proof of citizen to their clients. They thought they would do a good thing and review all the state law requirements across the country and provide assistance so that their clients could get these. They put in 61 requests. Only 25 have the birth certificates have actually been returned to these citizens. Some were returned quickly, but some took months. So this is just a little scientific example or a little study of what is going to be in huge amount when all of us are required to get our certified birth certificate. But what about the 39 others who are still waiting? And some had to go get back and get notarized applications, which is a huge burden. It costs money, and you all know that we know this language, but your constituents may not even know what that means. So, again, reiterating that it is so difficult for folks to get birth certificates. So what should you do? We urge you to pass the House Joint Memorial 11 with -2 amendments. Please join the many other states in a bipartisan manner that have been saying, Congress, you've imposed this on us, you've given us no monies, you've given us no rules, this doesn't move us forward, and this is a huge burden on us. Please step back. You should pass House Bill 2827 and join other states. I want to go on the record as opposing the -1 amendments. While some of it is fine, Section 3 alarms us to no end because the broad language set forth therein is to authorizing DMV to go forward with databases, to start making decisions, and particularly there's one portion, and I'm trying to find my copy. Here it is. It would authorize DMV on page 2, lines 12 and 13, to start collection, management, and retention of personal information and identity documents now. It says May. I don't know what they intend to do. Compliance is not till 2010. You should, if you move forward with Real ID, you can pull the trigger on these things after you've evaluated the systems and made decisions, but you shouldn't do it before. We urge you in the alternative to instead If you are wanting to move forward with Real ID, in addition to passing out the memorial, joining the many other states to apply for the extension, evaluate the final rules when they're issued, require DMV and appropriate stakeholders to prepare a report on all the statutory changes for the next legislation, not only to come into compliance with Real ID, but to put as number one issue for your constituents, privacy and safeguards for safety for personal information and the databases. That should be how, if you move forward, you should be looking at all the decision points. Thank you so much for allowing me an extended period of time to testify. I appreciate your looking at this issue and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at an article in State Legislators. It's the May edition. And there's an article in here called Regs Fail to Quell State Real ID Actions. And the article confirms most of what you're talking about. But the very opening paragraph says, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security finally released in March the long-anticipated regulations for implementation of the Real ID Act of 2005. What additional regulations are we waiting for?
Oh, Chair Beyer, Representative Smith, they are, and they're right here, they are draft regulations. And as I testified earlier, they have issued extensive draft regulations of how states can comply.
So these are the draft regulations.
Right.
They have not finalized those.
May 8th is the date for final comments, and then they haven't given a deadline. But more importantly, and I urge you to look at them, especially if you want to be have your brain twisted a lot, they've not resolved a lot of questions. So they said, here's what we think you might be able to do and you should do, but we'd like comments so that we can then make final rules.
Thank you.
That do it. And if I can just add, because I forgot to mention a few other documents that I provided that I would draw your attention to, two letters, one from, and I believe you have testimony that's been handed to you from the City of Eugene, but I also have included letters from the Chief of Police, Leonard, I believe, from Eugene, and Chief of Police Ron Louie from Hillsborough, urging you not to move forward with requiring lawful presence in Oregon driver's license and setting forth all the reasons why in terms of public safety, and then as the head of law enforcement for their local jurisdiction, why that's the bad move. A Wall Street Journal piece about why Real ID is bad, Senator John Sununu's article on it, a Cato Institute, and I believe I included, if not, I apologize, but there was an ALEC. I think I forgot to copy it, but the ALEC.
It's here.
It is here. Edit came out with a very strong resolution in opposition. So, thank you. Excuse me, Representative Smith. I wrote on your question there to just finalize what was in the record on my material.
Can I ask one more question? And I appreciate you taking the time to answer these. If the Real ID Act is not the answer to determining or being able to document a person's citizenship, what would you recommend?
Well, Chair Beyer, Representative Smith, you have a few questions there. Do we want to, if you're talking about documentation of citizenship, again, for what purpose, if we've got the issue of the immigration dynamic in this country, my answers to you on that are more that is a federal decision, a large issue that this country must grapple with, working with Mexico particularly, but other countries in terms of economic and all those issues. Now, because you don't need to be in this country and be a citizen. There are many people here under various lawful statuses that aren't citizens. So we are not a country only of citizens and no one else is present. If you're talking about it for travel, well, we have passports. So that's the one answer to your question is, how do you prove it? Well, you get a passport, and I think actually it's going to be easier for U.S. citizens to actually get the documents to get a passport than it is for Real ID. If you're talking about driving, that's where I go back to, and I'd urge you to read both of the Chiefs of Police letters about why proof of citizenship for driving is something that they discourage and don't think in terms of their work as law enforcement is a good idea. For us, driving, I realize that you could say, well, Ms. Meyer, your license has become a de facto identification card, and I'm very, I agree that seems to have happened, but what we want folks to do is get a license and get insured, because folks who are licensed know the rules of the road, and folks who are insured, if you are hit by them, have insurance. And I remember talking to Chief Louie about a month ago when the first Real ID hearing was coming up. And he told me on the phone that the biggest complaint he gets in community meetings is people who are uninsured. Now, I would suggest that those folks who may not have lawful presence have every deal of motive to get a driver's license and get insured, because they do want to drive on the roads. They want to be in compliance to the law, and so they have every incentive to do that. By removing citizenship or requiring citizenship, the result will be not that anyone will go away and not that you will have addressed the large federal policies around immigration, but you'll have less people who are driving with licenses and knowing the rules of the road and insurance. And I don't think we win by doing an immigration policy on the backs of our driver's licenses. People will still drive, so you don't stop that problem. You just create new ones. Does that answer some of your question? I mean,
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Erica.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erica Steinbauer. I coordinate CAUSA, which is a statewide immigrant rights coalition here in Oregon. And I want to comment on the three bills before us today in their existing form, since I didn't see the amendments until I walked in here today. But, of course, our concerns on the issues apply throughout. CAUSA strongly opposes HB 2270, as well as any legislation to require proof of legal status to obtain an Oregon driver's license. We support HB 2827, again, unamended, as we haven't studied the amendments, and HJM 11, which condition Oregon's implementation of the Real ID Act on meeting certain requirements, especially by the federal government. We agree that Oregon should apply for the federal extension recently announced by the Bush administration, which would extend the deadline to December of 2009. We feel it's important to note that HB 2270 requires new information and verification for every Oregonian licensed to drive. HB 2270 does not make us any safer, and passing it, especially this session, is inefficient and costly, with many unintended problems and consequences. Many of them Andrea laid out. I won't take more time by going through them in detail. As Lerna testified, it would cost Oregonians millions of dollars, many of which would be passed on to the person acquiring the driver's license. The rules have not been finalized. It would place substantial burdens on Oregonians, including citizens, to obtain a license, especially immigrants, elderly, low-income, and homeless people. And it would threaten privacy and pose a risk for identity theft. CAUSA opposes any bill to require proof of legal presence to get an Oregon driver's license because it puts the safety, security of all Oregonians at risk. Passage of HB 2270 would possibly result in an increase in unlicensed, uninsured drivers on the road, and this would essentially shift the cost to licensed, insured drivers, which would make insurance more expensive for everybody. We would all be at risk to drivers who are no longer afforded the opportunity to take a driving test, learn the rules of the road, and get insurance. I would just add on to one of Andrea's answers to one of the questions that immigration law is very complex and that I believe that our DMV offices already have plenty of work to do without becoming immigration offices. I've attached to my testimony a chart from the National Immigration Law Center which details statutes and resolutions pending in many other states. Oregon would not be alone in saying that Real ID is not, that we do not want to implement Real ID. I've also attached a number of other talking points from and quotes from religious and law enforcement perspectives. Many of the people who we represent were unable to take off work to be here today, but a number of testimonies are attached, and many of them look forward to meeting with you on May 1 when we'll be doing a lobby day on these issues. I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ruth, Bendel, and
good afternoon. My name is Ruth Bendel. I'm also the Voter Integrity Chair for Washington County Republicans. I'm absolutely thrown over the cliff with all of these reasons why we shouldn't why we shouldn't get a real ID requirement in place in Oregon. I would like to tell you, I have submitted written testimony, so I'm not going to read it or anything. I would like to tell you that several of my colleagues and I attended the Miguel Robledo and Fabio Robledo immigration fraud trials that were held in Washington County. And we listened to the coyotes who testified under oath, and they said that Oregon is a destination, the preferred destination for getting false ID credentials. We are a magnet for people of all stripes coming in here to get false IDs. And the fact that we have such loose requirements at DMV, at voter, at our election rules for getting a voter ID card, those rules are being, or lack of rules, are being exploited. And the coyotes do not just bring in illegals seeking cheap labor, right? They also are there being sought by Al-Qaeda, if you listen to Fox News, for $3,000 a head. Al-Qaeda will pay the coyotes to bring in their operatives. So that if you want Oregon to remain a gateway for terrorists, God knows how many have already come in and spread out through other states and joined cells. If you want that responsibility, just listen to all the reasons why not. But for people who care about the security of this nation, the Real ID Act, without any other options for checking that a person is here legally, abiding with national laws, which all of you officials, when you took your offices, you swore to uphold the laws, not just of one county or one state. You swore to uphold the laws. And the Federal Real ID Act is a national law. I think instead of finding reasons why not to implement it, just find a way to implement it as quickly and clearly as possible. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Any questions?
If not, thank you. Jeff Stone.
Chair Beyer, I'm Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I will be mercifully brief. You've already heard a lot about the federal rules, the unfunded mandate, a lot of things that have already preceded today, and I've given you my comments that I will not read, but I do wish to talk about what you can do in terms of compliance to Real ID. We do appreciate the situation that you're in, and over the last few months we've heard about compliance dates and fears and federal buildings and airplanes, and we share these concerns and would urge the state to seek an extension with Department of Homeland Security. As you already heard, we're not alone, 28 other states. But in terms of outright refuting Real ID, we urge caution there. And it's important to recognize the intended and unintended consequences of adopting a concept, much like Real ID, before it's fully implemented at the federal level. We did want to try to provide you with a couple pathways that we think may be relevant in your consideration here today. We've met with both the majority and minority offices in both chambers, the governor's office, regarding this act, and we honestly believe that you're grappling with it in an open way, and it needs a resolution. We would urge you to file the extension in October of this year. And there are two pathways that I would at least illustrate for you for your consideration. First is providing dollars to DMV to create an implementation plan with proper security and privacy considerations in conjunction with the extension request. Stakeholders, much like myself and you as legislators, should work with the Bush administration and Congress to try to help provide adequate federal dollars to help implement this act. Second, I'm not advocating what my nursery folks have advocated in the state of Illinois, which is a separate driver's license altogether. That was passed by the state of Illinois. But I would have you examine what some people have called Real ID Plus. I like using plus because it seems like you're adding something. This concept would keep the current driver's license process and have it solely for the intention that it was intended for driving. It's not an official document, and this would, and you could have, either using your passport or for those who have the ability to implement or get the documentations for Real ID to do so. We think that's reasoned. I would hate to think about a four-hour time in the DMV office. That would be bad. It's bad for me. And I don't even know where my Social Security card is. I probably should check on that. But we would urge you to consider these type of pathways and to consider, if you do amend the governor's bill, 2270, to have it go towards the side of helping DMV get the ball rolling and file for the extension. I will commit to you that we will work with you every step of the way, and I just want to make sure that when we fix it once and right. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
I have a question, I guess. Have you looked at any of the amendments?
Madam Chair, yes, during my good friend Andrea Meyer's soliloquy, I was able to review them. 22 minutes, by the way, not that I was. The HJM 11 amendments seem fine to me. I've not had an opportunity to really review the extensive amendments on the 2827 bill. But I think what's most important here is the direction that you set as a legislature. If you had ample rules that were going to be here just before sine die, that would be one thing. But I don't think you're going to get them, in my personal view, well into the fall at the earliest. And so that's why I urge caution in acting on this bill as currently written.
Thank you. I will say that we probably won't pass a bill out today on, we might pass out the HJM, but the other bill, so if you would take a look at it and you can provide any feedback on the language of that bill, that would be great.
Madam Chair, I'm here to serve.
Thank you. Okay, Elizabeth Bon, and I'm going to, okay.
What's the proper one?
Members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Van Stouteren. I live in McMinnville. I'm a member of Oregonians for Immigration Reform, and I serve as the secretary. I support passage of HB 2270, conforming the Oregon Vehicle Code to provisions of the Federal Real ID Act of 2005. It is a terrible disservice to the citizens of Oregon and the United States to attempt to delay implementation of the Real ID Act through such measures as HJM 11. It is of utmost importance that Oregon take all steps possible to cooperate with the federal government in the apprehension and deportation of illegal aliens. Illegal immigration is a deadly danger to the citizens of this country. It threatens the sovereignty and survival of the United States. Other states have long ago required verification of Social Security numbers for driver's license applicants. Oregon appears to be dragging its feet. Oregon is one of only five states that do not verify Social Security numbers and is one of only three that do not require either proof of citizenship or a valid Social Security number. This has made Oregon a magnet for ID fraud, the drug trade, and illegal immigration. The public wants an end to illegal immigration. Standing in opposition to the public's concerns are those who profit from the depressed wages and easy exploitability of illegal aliens. Other opponents expect to gain political power through them. Which side are you on? Are you on the public side or the side of special interests seeking wealth and power to themselves? The charges against the Real ID Act that are outlined in House Joint Memorial 11 repeat many of the falsehoods that were spread while the bill was being debated in Congress in 2005. As a student of family history, I know that obtaining birth certificates or proof of citizenship for anyone born or naturalized in the United States in the last 8 or 9 decades is rarely a problem. HJM 11 greatly exaggerates the difficulties. Here are some statements by congressional advocates of the Real ID Act in 2005, answering the hysterical charges against it. It is fiction that the Real ID Act creates a national database and is a threat to privacy. Under the legislation, states will retain control of the issuance process as well as their driver databases. Importantly, the legislation would enable all states to share information contained in their database with other states requesting such information in order to close the current loophole and the issuance process that allows individuals to carry driver's licenses from multiple states. If anything, a more secure document and issuance process will only serve to enhance privacy. It is fiction that the Real ID Act is an unfunded federal mandate being heaped upon the state. The Act provides for grant programs to the states to assist in implementing the minimum standards that are established for federal recognition. The legislation authorizes such funds as may be necessary to fulfill these requirements, and a collaborative process is established to make sure we meet this important goal. The only people who are threatened by the Real ID Act are terrorists, crooks, frauds, companies that hire and exploit illegal aliens, and the illegal aliens themselves. The safety of law-abiding citizens will be strengthened, and the risk of a new attack by foreign terrorists will be reduced. The smear attacks on the Real ID Act come from the same people who oppose any internal enforcement of the immigration laws. I commend Governor Kulongoski for sponsoring HB 2270. Chair Beyer and committee members, please pass HB 2270 out of the Transportation Committee so it can be enacted into law by the legislature. It is very important that HB 2270 be passed without adding any amendments giving driving certificates or identification cards to persons who cannot prove citizenship or legal presence. Such provisions would completely negate the effectiveness of the bill and merely cause hardship for honest citizens while giving a green light to ever-increasing illegal immigration. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Any questions?
See any? I guess I have a couple questions for you. I guess the first one is on the passage of the Real ID law in Congress. Are you aware of how many public hearings there were, how much discussion there was on this bill before it was passed?
Yes. Yes. I followed it. I've been a member of Oregonians for Immigration Reform for a good while, and I have followed all of this.
So you know that there were no hearings on this proposal?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion, maybe not this particular bill, but there's been lots of discussion on the whole problem of illegal immigration and what to do about it and the need for driver licenses.
And then have you
looked at any of the amendments that we're discussing today?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen them.
Thank you. I do recommend maybe that if there's copies over there, you might want to take a look at them and see what we're discussing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have Stephen Hutt.
Hewitt.
I knew I was going to get it wrong. So
I don't have any documents. Madam Chairman, fellow Oregonians, I don't come here as a politician. I come here as an Oregonian. My family arrived here in 1623. My wife's family is relative to the second territorial governor, Borgen, and I have vetted with my family as to my future. I no longer will hold a job. I will no longer hold anything else. And as my father has recommended that I always say, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Can I, That's all right. They missed your name. Can you please
H-U-I-T. This means I am also under oath. And my oath is held to a high standard. My father was under that oath. And every generation of Hewitts that have lived under this nation's flag have been under that oath. We have shed our blood. We have died. Under that statement, I would say this. In about 5 hours, sunset will hit the border. There's a young woman with a child inside her. When she crosses that border, she is one of my citizens. Behind her are coyotes that have chased her here and hounded her and robbed her. And a government behind there that is as corrupt as you know. In front of her, there are wolves. And they are eating her. And they're consuming her. And that child is my citizen. This is not anything other than a heartfelt thing. And my father has sent me here to say this. Don't become a wolf. Don't align with them. The sheepdogs are coming home. Remember that. Do not think this is like every other war that we are fighting. The sheepdogs will return. Anybody that is aligned with the wolf will have an adversary. This flock is in danger. Wake up. That's all I have to say. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions? Simon, thank you so much. Linnell.
Madam Chair, members of the panel, I'm Lyniel Vandermolen, and I'm on the board of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. I urge you to vote yes on HB 2270 as a way of protecting our citizens from the actual and the potential damage that results from Oregon's open granting of driver's licenses to illegals. The governor's own task force stated that this policy has led to Oregon becoming a magnet for illegal immigration, and that our current policy will attract more fraudsters from out of state. There's no logical reason why Oregon should continue to attract the meth trade, illegal aliens, ID thieves, and potential terrorists that thrive on the loose standards that the DMV currently allows. I also encourage you to pass HB 2270 without the driver's privilege card that defeats the purpose of stricter standards. Adding that provision would make us one of only two states that would have a driver's privilege card. Tennessee stopped issuing them when they realized they were drawing crime syndicates into their state. It would also create a two-tiered system of strict ID requirements for citizens, but only a utility bill or a matricula consular card for illegal aliens that they can fraudulently buy off the street. There's no reason to attract problems to Oregon or to treat citizens with more suspicion than lawbreakers. Now, I support the passage of HB 2827 if you think that you must separate the language of the Real ID Act from the driver's license bill until the details of the Real ID Act are finished, because I know that's in flux. But I support HB 2827 only in order to speed the passage of the governor's driver's license bill, because we must turn off one of the magnets for illegal immigration and all its associated costs and problems. I'd like to move on to HJM 11. It's an attempt to prevent the adoption of the Real ID Act on the basis that it's too expensive for bureaus to handle and is too onerous for the handful of citizens who can't find their birth certificates, for example. But laws based on exceptions only compromise the welfare of the majority of citizens. It's onerous for citizens to be vulnerable to terrorist attacks made possible by fraudulent driver's licenses, and it's expensive for us to continually subsidize the cost of illegal immigration. I urge you to reject HJM 11 as nothing more than political foot-dragging. I know that opponents of HB 2270 are personally, politically, and professionally dedicated to helping certain people break immigration laws, and they accuse anyone who opposes them as being racist. If you can understand that, you're smarter than me, because I just have never understood that mindset. But I want my Oregon driver's license to be valid and to mean something and to be just as secure as driver's licenses from other states. I don't want it to be just an Oregon criminal card. And you can assure this by passing HB 2270. There are two extra points I'd like to make. A previous speaker stated that at least illegal aliens will have insurance if we give them driver's licenses. That is an urban myth. There is no database at the DMV that keeps track of who's got an insurance policy. An illegal alien can get his card, show his insurance policy, walk right out the door and cancel it, and no one will be the wiser. So let's not believe the kind of myths that we've been hearing here today. Also, I noticed that opponents of HB 2270 are always bringing up the block of how expensive it will be to implement. However, no one ever seems to think that asking taxpayers to absorb the cost of illegal immigration is too expensive. And right now in Oregon, we're paying $511 million per year just in bilingual education. I'm not even talking about the expense of ICE holds, incarceration, food stamps, free health care, special migrant care programs. These all add up, and we're paying for it all the time. And so I would rather bite the bullet now and pay what it takes to have a secure driver's license card than to keep being leached to death by this illegal invasion. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Question, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you realize who filed House Bill 2270? Our Governor Kulongowski.
And so I call it the governor's driver's license bill.
Well, I guess I'm kind of feeling ornery right now. Sometimes I get on the House floor and I rant and I rave about the wrongs of society, but at the same time, you join me too. But at the same time, we also have to acknowledge as Republicans, as conservatives, when we feel that the other side of the aisle has done a good job. And this is introduced by Governor Kulongowski after a lot of thought and counsel in a report to the governor in August 2006. And so I just want to put on the record that I appreciate the work of the governor in bringing this bill forward.
I think he's
taken a great step for Oregon, and I think we need to acknowledge that
That's why I quoted at the very beginning that his own task force stated that we need stricter standards for our driver's license, and I'm all behind it. This is not bipartisan. I mean, it is bipartisan. Excuse me.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, one more. Rick Bennett.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. AARP has a rather large policy book. It's a good size phone book in size, covering a great many issues. Our National Board of Directors in February updated that policy book related to Real ID in two areas that have already been discussed, and I won't go into great detail there, but they're just very practical, I think, issues for implementation that still have not been addressed. One has to do with the documentation and the fact that older citizens, those living in rural areas, low income, minority, lawful citizens, of this country may have difficulty actually providing the documentation requested to verify their citizenship and residency. The other issue, of course, is ID theft. Our members have clearly stated in numerous surveys and so forth that they are as a great concern about ID theft and protection of personal information. And the DMV, it's going to cost considerable dollars to ensure that that database that's being created is in fact adequately protected. The draft regulations that have come out and been circulated at this point do not address our concerns. We hope that in the future that perhaps we'll be able to move forward on those concerns and come to some reasonable accommodations on them, but at this point we're not there, and we still have concerns about the implementation of this act. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative
Butler. Were there, I almost got away.
Yeah.
Does AARP have positions on these bills, or are you just expressing generic concern?
I think I'm just going to leave it as a general concern as far as the impact that we believe that they, at this point, would have on our members and those 50 years old and older.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that is all that I have that's signed up. And unless I see someone that wants to come up and testify, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearings on House Bill 2827, 2270, and HJM 11. And committee, thank you. And hopefully I'll see most of you on Friday.
You betcha, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you as
what
well.
What dedication that represents.
Madam Chair, in all seriousness, will you talk with Representative Dingfelder? Because I think I'm definitely going to have a...